Welcome again, folks, to another week of Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio, Talk That Talk with Tweety and LJ. I am LJ.
I'm Tweety.
Tweety, what's going on, man? Memorial Day was last weekend. How your week going so far?
It was going kind of crazy, man. We're getting a lot of rain down here this month, man. It's flooding out everything last week. It's been kind of tough down here in Dallas, Texas.
Heard a few deaths and all that, seeing that stuff on the news, and I'm way across the country in a completely different time zone. At least we figured out the audio issues this week. We don't have a delay in you getting on or a delay in me getting on. So finally, for once, we got it straight. We should have it straight going forward. But if you're listening out there in internet land on your phone, on your PC, or however you may be indulging in this, feel free to give us a call at any time during the conversation. The phone number is 646-668-2343. Again, the number to call in is 646-668-2343. All right, so we're going to get right into it. So, biggest thing in sports that happened this week, FIFA. If you weren't tracking, Swiss authorities arrested 14 people FIFA organization officials, and basically the charges have included money laundering, conspiracy, wire fraud, and racketeering. Also, there's expected to be more arrests related to some sports marketing executives. So most of the charges filed, or the charges that these guys have been charged with, are related to corruption involving bids for World Cups. And the other guy personnel they're expecting to arrest are related to corruption and stuff like that, related to marketing and broadcasting deals for the World Cup. I know there's been some issues with the last two bids, 2018, when it's going to Russia, they beat out England, and the 2022 World Cup is going to be in Qatar, however you pronounce it, and they were competing. The U.S. is one of the final, and Qatar, was one of the biggest ones because, one, the temperature is like crazy hot there in the summer. I mean, the temperature is so hot in the summertime when they normally do the World Cup that there was talk that FIFA may move the World Cup to the left so they can have it in the wintertime in Qatar, where it's a little bit, when it's not as hot. What are your thoughts on the corruption issues with FIFA?
Well, honestly, I don't know what they plan on doing, man. Like I said, they're going to do what they're going to do to these 14 officials, give them jail time. I doubt it, but some of them may have, some of them may end up going to jail. But the thing is, how do you do an investigation and say FIFA is corrupt, everybody, you know, the head of FIFA is corrupt, but you don't do anything to the president of FIFA? Matter of fact, not only do you not do anything to the president of FIFA, you reelected that. Like, how does he get his job back? I don't get it. It's FIFA has been dirty. It starts at the top. It looks like it's going to continue to be dirty because you got the same person in the head of the organization.
It might possibly be that they haven't been able to get anything directly linking him to the corruption. I mean, you know, there's a pretty good logic stands to hold that, you know, if there is corruption within your organization and there's so many people who are part of the corruption, that the guy or gal at the head of that organization is either involved with it in some way, shape, form, or fashion, or may have some idea that the corruption is going on. And basically, the corruption charges or bribery is what it really, what it really boils down to, is people paying these officials to vote a certain way when it comes time for the, you know, hey, I want to be the overall sponsor for the World Cup. Or, you know, I want my company to be the most prominent sponsor at the World Cup. So I grease this official's pockets, grease a few more's pockets, and now I have sealed the deal for me my company, which will in turn, the amount of money you're going to make off of getting that exposure from the World Cup is probably, you know, millions upon millions, because as most people in America do not know and do not realize, soccer is by far the most popular sport in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's true, but
Go ahead.
No, I'm just gonna say it's true. I just figure if you're gonna, you know, try to have a change in the way FIFA runs its business, then you should have elected a new president, in my opinion.
Yeah, that would have made sense to be a good start. But you know, the thing about FIFA that makes it interesting is, it's not like, just think about how we elect our president, and I'm thinking strictly with money. Well, I won't even talk how we elect our president, but with money, when it comes to money, the size of your country doesn't matter. So, for example, the United States, we're bigger than, say, India. Land mass wise, even though India has more, the population is large, we're going to get the same amount of money from the World Cup as India does, even though, you know, land mass wise we have more, or we're larger, or you can say the opposite, India has more people than us, but we still get the same piece of the pie, even though, you know, our team's probably a little bit more prominent within the actual goings on of what's going on in soccer. But I mean, we'll see how that turns out. Right now, it's looking like a mess for FIFA, and it's kind of a black eye at the moment for soccer as a whole. And the thing that I hate about it the most is that the Women's World Cup is about to start in the next couple of weeks. The women's the U.S. women's team first game, I believe, is on June 8th. So I don't like the fact that it's overshadowing that, but you know, what can you do? Most people in America just don't – a lot of people in America don't particularly like soccer, and then, you know, women's sports tend to take an even further back seat a lot of times to men's sports, even though the women's national team has traditionally been better than our men's national soccer team. But moving on, even though I love soccer and I hate to move on from it, we'll move on to my love, my favorite sport out there. Basketball. The NBA Finals will start this upcoming week, June 4th. The Warriors beat the Rockets in five, and of course the Cavs were able to sweep the Hawks. I was surprised that the Cavs swept the Rockets. Excuse me, not the Rockets, the Hawks. What did you think about that series and why the Cavs were able to sweep the Rockets?
The Cavs swept the Hawks because
damn, I said the Hawks. I said the Rockets again.
You start out, I think they folded once they lost the first two at home. Honestly, I don't think they were into it anymore. I think the Hawks. That's what I'm talking about. I figured the series was over with after they lost the first two at home, and when they got down big in the third game, I think they just called it quits pretty much. That's just my opinion. I mean, after they got down 3-0, it wasn't a matter of if they was going to lose the series or win. They just decided to go ahead and pack it in after four. Lost by 30.
The early vacation.
30-point game in game four.
The early vacation. Calling his travel agent at halftime. AD, I need you to go and tighten up my travel plan. Go get that G4 ready.
They called that quick.
I think this is the one. This is the time. The Atlanta series was. It makes a good argument for the theory that a lot of people have, in that in order to be a championship team, you have to have at least one, superstar may not be the right word, but, you know, you have to have that guy. Since we're talking NBA,
you have to have somebody that you know you can go to.
Exactly. That guy you can give the ball to and say, hey, you know what? We haven't scored in the last 3 or 4 minutes. We need you to get us some buckets. You know, at least, you know, because, I mean, you can have a great offense and all that, but, you know, one of the things that's different about the playoffs and the regular season is that you're not, you know, in the playoffs, you're not bouncing from opponent to opponent to opponent to opponent. You know, you have time to zone in on all the little idiosyncrasies of the opponent that you're facing. So it becomes easier to take away the things that they like to do. Or, you know, if that post player likes to catch it 16 feet away from the basket, it becomes a little bit easier to push him to 17 feet. Or if he likes to turn on his right shoulder, try to make him turn on his left shoulder. It becomes a little bit easier because you're guarding that player every game in your study. You have all that time to study this one particular player and this one particular team. So I think they strengthen the argument that, hey, you may have a great team and a great regular season, but ultimately, in my mind as well, as a former coach, I think you have to have that guy or that gal on your team that you can give the ball to and say, hey, we need
to
care for a little bit. Yeah, and you know, that's what we pay you to do, and that's what you're going to do. And I mean, the injury to Kyle Korver, that didn't
help.
Oh,
that was huge. Yeah, that was huge.
And,
that
you know, the injury
to their offensive. Right.
Yeah, the injury to Carroll did not help either. But, you know, that's the way the ball bounces sometimes. Speaking of the injury to Kyle Korver, what do you think about Dellavedova? Do you think he's a dirty player?
Nah, I'm not gonna go so far to call him dirty, but I will say I'm gonna say old school as far as putting him in the mindset of the old school player that didn't have a lot of athleticism but would do the little sneaky things, the little like maybe a Sam Cassell type or even a Dennis Rodman type, just do the little things to get under somebody's skin just to see if I can get in your head. Because if I can get in your head, then I'll have to beat you athletically. And I'm going to give him that right now because, honestly, he hasn't done anything dirty. Even the injury to Kyle Korver, it was a loose ball. I mean, now I can see if Kyle Korver had possession of the ball and Dellavedova dove at his feet trying to get a steal or something, but they was both going for a loose ball. And yeah, maybe he put his back to him after he had the ball. Maybe he shouldn't have done that. But at the same time, if Kyle Korver ain't lazy and get on the ground, then you might not be missing Kyle Korver for the rest of the series.
I ain't like I said last week, I think Dellavedova is a dirty player. I ain't giving his ass no breaks about if or nothing like that. To me, I mean, you go back to the series against the Bulls where Taj Gibson got thrown out. When he locks his fucking legs, he locks his feet or whatever you want to call it around Taj Gibson's ankle.
Right.
That's one thing. Okay, then he fucking, to me, you can it's hard to judge somebody's intent. You can just judge what you see and make your own call. And if they say something opposite, you know, you make your own decision about whether you believe them or not. To me, I'm not going to say he intentionally tried to hurt Kyle Korver, but I do think he turned his body into his leg intentionally. To me, that's a dirty play. And then with the incident with Al Horford, when Al Horford got thrown out, to me, he threw it. He fell, yes, he did fall unintentionally, but to me, when he fell, he lunged himself a little bit into the side of Al Horford's leg. Now, that's my personal opinion, but I think he's a dirty player. Anyways, I was going to say, forget him, because he's not a scrub, but fuck him. Let's move on. The Rockets, they out. They bum. I mean, James Harden, he had 13 turnovers in the signed game. That was kind of crazy to me, but the Rockets are history.
Because he don't give a
the
damn.
Hawks are history.
My fault. I mean, I ain't even cut you off, but James Harden got to who?
Over here.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I think James Harden just folded. I don't think he really gave two shits about that game six. Game five, I think it was over with for him. I think, like I said, 17 turnovers. He almost committed the most turnovers in the game by a player. And that shouldn't happen dealing with your offense. He, in most of the playoff game, yeah, he did. But he almost took Jason Kidd off the top as far as in any game, period. And
he only took eight shots. That's another interesting.
And that show MVP? Come on.
Houston's in the rear view. We can't even see them no more. They ain't even in the playoffs. spot. Nobody cares who finishes third or fourth. KF. The Warriors, Cavs. Things going to win. No, we'll get to that at the end. What do you think is the key to the series? What do you think some important things off of this series to look out for?
Well, first of all, who or how many people from Golden State is going to try to go on LeBron James? And if so, what type of success will they have on LeBron James? Because we all see now Cleveland don't operate off of LeBron James' well shooting percentage, because even though they swept in the Eastern Conference Finals, LeBron James shot horrible. I'm talking about under 20% on the three-point line.
Yeah, he only shot 42% from the field.
Yeah, he was not a part of – I ain't going to say he wasn't a part of the offense, but his shooting percentage wasn't great. They really did rely on him to get everybody else involved. And if other people can get involved, then – or if the people who they throw at LeBron James get into early foul trouble, it might be a long series, or that game may be a long game. But the X factor will be, can – I would say Harrison Barnes, or who I'm just gonna say Harrison Barnes, because I think that's who they're gonna at least try to start out with. Can he play LeBron James, or play with LeBron James, as good as Kawhi Leonard did last year or the year before when San Antonio beat Miami? Like, can he stick with him? Can he make LeBron James play on both sides of the court? And
I think Golden State, the interesting thing about this series is Golden State has several guys who they can put on LeBron James for different spells. They got Iguodala, Harrison Barnes. They can put Klay Thompson on him. I'm sure Draymond Green will guard him for stretches. And Sean Livingston, not as long, but Sean Livingston, when he was playing with the Nets, I think it was last year, he actually guarded him a little bit when the Nets played the Heat in the playoffs. So I think those matchups will be interesting. The one thing I'm really interested to see is who Kyrie Irving been banged up the last couple of weeks. If he's not 100%, especially with his with the problem being with his knee, I'm interested to see who David Blatt puts him on defense. Because the last thing you want is a guy who's not 100% guarding Steph Curry. Right? So will he guard Steph Curry if he's not 100%, or won't he? And if he's not guarding Steph Curry, who is he going to guard? Because that's one of the great things that Golden State has going for them. They don't really have a guy outside of maybe Bogut who they put in the game. And you can say, well, we don't have to guard him. Like every guy they put in, they play on a consistent basis. You have to guard them, or they may not necessarily be great 3-point shooters, but they're all good enough offensive players that if you don't guard them, they'll score 20-plus points on you. To include Leandro Barbosa, Sean Livingston, guys like that. So who Kyrie Irving guards will be?
He's going to have to at least start out on Steph Curry. Like, he's going to have to. I mean, because like you say, who else you going to guard?
That's the thing, though. I mean, it seems like do you want an injury-plagued a guy with a bad wheel trying to guard the best shooter in the NBA? A guy who he will pull up at any time or anywhere. It doesn't matter. As long as he can get a shot off, he'll shoot it. And there's probably a 50% chance he's going to make it.
Right.
You're
going
to have to come off all
the
screens.
Either that, or you're going to put that injury plague person on Harrison Barnes, or you're going to have to sit there because he's not going to be able to guard Draymond Green or anybody like that. So either you're going to have to start him, you're going to have to guard Steph Curry, he's going to have to play beyond the best of his abilities if he's hobbled. If not, he's going to have to sit out, or he's just going to have to tough it out, and he's got to start. He's got to play against Steph Curry.
I think regardless, the Cavs are going to, in that starting lineup, if Kyrie Irving starts, they're going to have a hole on their – they're going to have a huge hole defensively if he's not 100%. And then if Matthew Dellavedova has to play a lot of minutes because Kyrie Irving can't go, I'm not sure without LeBron averaging 30-plus points a game, I'm not sure that the Cavs can score enough points. And I think that's the issue that they're going to have but I'm not sure they're going to be able to score enough points because I don't anticipate the Warriors doubling LeBron a lot. I mean, I think this becomes a series of, this is my opinion, if I were coaching, this becomes a series of, hey, LeBron, you're going to have to score 50 points every game because these other guys are not going to let do it. The other matchup I think is important is the Bogut-Mozgov matchup. They're both great rim protectors. I would think Bogut's probably a little bit better defensive player, and Mozgov's probably a little bit better offensively on the pick-and-roll side of the game, but Bogut's a better passer. But I think that's going to be important. Whoever can win that matchup on a night-to-night basis will give their team a little bit of an advantage. And the other important key factor, I think, is going to be the shooting of J.R. Smith. I think his shooting was huge in that last series, especially in game one where he hit, I think he had 8-3, scored 28 points. And he shot pretty consistently the last series. So I think that's going to be a huge factor. If Golden State can keep him shooting in the low 30s or lower, and unless Kyrie Irving is 100% and can go up and, you know, can score like Kyrie Irving does, you know, I see Golden State. Oh, we got a caller. Shall I take this?
Yeah, go ahead and take it.
All right, yeah, push the button. All right, here we go. We got our first caller ever. Or not. Don't know what happened, but the caller went away. Caller, whoever you are,
caller went
try
away.
To call back. I don't know what happened, but it went away. But caller, whoever you are, call back in, and we'll try to get you back online. All right, so picking time. Who you got and how many games?
I got Cleveland at 6.
Yeah,
I got, because if it goes 7, Golden State is going to win. But I got Cleveland at 6. And, I hate to say it, but it's strictly based on, well, not just strictly based on what LeBron, the impact LeBron going to have in the series, but the name we forgot to mention was Tristan Thompson. I think he's going to have a big play in this series. I think Cleveland is going to end up trying to go small ball for the most of the series and put him at the 5 and
now
LeBron at the 4.
That will be interesting. That will be interesting because, remember, of all the lineups that Golden State has played all season, their small lineup with Draymond Green at the 5 and Harrison Barnes at the 4 has been their best lineup all season. So that's a great thing to point out, and I do think that will be I think that'll be an interesting matchup. Yeah, I forgot about Tristan Thompson completely. He's a great offensive rebounder. But other than that, I wouldn't personally be, as long as you can keep him off the glass, I don't think he's that much of a factor. He's pretty good at pick and roll as far as catching and catching alley-oops and stuff like that. But he's not a guy that's going to beat you one-on-one. If Tristan Thompson has to beat you one-on-one, you're probably in pretty good shape. I'm going to take the Warriors in 5 or 6 games.
Ooh.
I think the Cavs.
You got to give LeBron there one, maybe 2 wins? Ooh.
Well, I mean, realistically, the East really, in my opinion, is not very good. You know, it's not very good. The Warriors have played some teams that have been good defensively, but this is going to be the first team they've played. Excuse me, not the Warriors. I'm sorry, I meant to say the Cavs. The Cavs have played some good teams defensively, but this is the first time they're going to play a team in the playoffs that is elite defensively as well as elite offensively.
True.
So I think that the Warriors, the quality of opponents the Warriors have played is better. They've played a team that plays similar to the Cavs, meaning, you know, a bunch of shooters and one great player. I mean, you know, Kyrie's a little bit banged up right now. Houston's kind of a team like that. You know, they play a little bit smaller. They got some guys who can stretch the floor. So I just think the Warriors, I mean, nobody, they haven't faced anybody as good as LeBron. I mean, I'm not saying that by any stretch of the imagination, but I am saying I think the Warriors have faced teams that are similar to the Cavs, and they passed that test, but I don't think the Cavs have faced anybody that's similar to the Warriors because, again, who's Kyrie Irving going to guard if he's not healthy? And then if when Dellavedova's in, he brings great defense, but he's not going to stop Steph Curry. But you lose a lot offensively when he comes in. I mean, I know he had some good games against the Hawks, but it's the difference between guarding Jeff Teague and guarding Steph Curry. It's, you know, like Meek Mill said, it's levels to this shit. And Jeff Teague, it's almost disrespectful to mention him to Steph Curry, except to say they both play in the NBA and both play point guard. No disrespect to Jeff Teague because he's an all-star this past season. A very good player. So I'm taking Golden State in five, no more than six. I think LeBron can win a game or two for the Cavs, and then after that, I don't think they got a shot. I mean, I'm saying they don't have a shot, because when you have one of the best players ever, you always have a shot. But I just think I think Curry, Klay Thompson, and the rest of those guys are too much for the Cavs. So I'm going to take Golden State in five or six. Plus, I don't think my son would be happy if I picked against Golden State. Like I said a couple of times out here, he's standing right here pointing in my face about thinking about picking against Golden State. But I got to say, he's a huge Steph Curry fan. We got a few minutes left. You want to get into this Adrian Peterson thing?
Yeah, we can do that. I wanted to get your opinion on. If you think Adrian Peterson was in his feelings or not when he was sending out all the tweets about how contracts are one-sided and should they be two-sided, if he was saying that if the team feel like they through with you and don't want you no more, they can just cut you. But if the player feel like he don't want to be there no more, it costs him money. He said it seems like it's just one-sided. He doesn't agree with how the NFL contracts are written. He feel like if the player wants to relocate, he should be able to relocate also, just like the owners are able to cut him if they do it.
This is what I would tell Adrian Peterson. If you don't agree with that, why the hell you sign that contract? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Nobody make you sign the damn contract. That's what you sign.
True.
So now,
true.
After the fact, if you want to say, well, it's not fair, hey, you know, it sounds like a damn personal problem. You have lawyers. You have all these, you have a team around you to help you stay out of contracts and out of situations that you wouldn't want to be in financially. So once you, if they don't keep you from getting out of that and you decide to sign a contract, that's on you. I mean, you know, if they don't want to let you out, I mean, take them to court, do whatever you got to do. But, I mean, shit, I'm not necessarily sympathizing with you. I mean, he may have an argument that maybe it's not fair. But, again, you know, he signed a contract, and so, you know, it kind of is what it is. The one thing I did think about, I thought was interesting about this, Adrian Peterson, he was talking in his tweets about how much criticism he was getting for fans. This is the one thing that pisses me off about fans. When they're always complaining about how much NFL players, how much professional athletes make, and how could you complain about this. Listen, first of all, you shouldn't be worried about somebody else's money.
True.
I mean, that just straight like that. You need to stay your ass out of somebody else's pocket and do what you do and don't worry about what he's making. And second of all, how you going to tell somebody else what isn't important enough to do? You know what I'm saying? If he want to hold out of OTA so he can get more money, how you going to say, oh, well, he shouldn't do that. He should. Listen, you know, if you can't do that at your job, then you can't do it.
Right,
don't tell
this
grown-ass man what he can and can't do. You know, you only got the NFL players have a shelf life. It ain't that long. 10, if you're lucky, you can get 15, 16 years. You know, some guys are longer than that, but it ain't that long. You got to get every dime out of it you can. And ordinary citizens don't understand that because they ain't playing for millions of dollars. So they don't, you know, you can't get in that mindset. So I think non-professional athletes probably should stay the hell out of professional athletes' business when it comes to managing their money or talking about their money. Anyways, we got less than 20 seconds to go. Thank everybody for tuning in. Make sure you tune in next week. I'm Tweety. I'm LJ.
No.
I'm tripping.
I'm Tweety.
And we'll
hit me
see
up
y'all
on Twitter
next week.
All right. Hit me up on Twitter, KWO3. Y'all have a good week.
Peace.